Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. In tonight's episode, David and I have decided to revisit the topic of our first episode ever, and we're going to be talking about astrology. To contrast the first episode, we're going to play around a little bit with general discussion and talk about our individual natal charts. Keep in mind, though, that David and I are not professional chart readers, and so this is just totally going with what we got. So, David,
when did you first learn to read charts?
Oh, me? Yeah. I don't really consider myself a chart reader, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
I piecemeal it together, yeah. And it's interesting because I've been, you know, kind of like a weekend warrior studier of astrology for, oh, I don't know, 15, 16 years at least, minimum, and I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, that's the nature of astrology. It's just overwhelming. You know, actually, when I was in Vegas just recently, I saw a psychic. I always like to do that when I go to Vegas. I don't always, but in the last couple of years I have. And the usual guy wasn't there, and there's a guy who came in, and for some reason he just all of a sudden broke out and decided to want to do kind of a quick natal chart. And this is before we got started. He goes, so this isn't paid. You know, I'm not even going to start the clock here. But he opens up his laptop and he's like, what's your birthday? Where were you born? And he types in all that information. Boom, my chart comes up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's my chart. I recognize those patterns. And so then he starts talking about he was like more doing the transit kind of stuff, which is really interesting. He was just like, yeah, you have the propensity for this and that and da, 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 da. And he's talking about this. And I was like, okay, yeah, yeah. And he's like, well, this is what's coming up in your year. This is the phase that you've passed. And this is what you can expect in the upcoming year. And I was like, wow, this is kind of interesting. And he's like, he was telling me that he's like, where are you from? And I told him, I'm from Pacific Northwest, Tacoma, Washington. And he says that there's a huge, like some of the most world-renowned astrologers are actually from the Pacific Northwest, he's told me. And he says he goes up there, comes up here a couple of times a year for these big astrology conferences. And I was like, wow, that's kind of wild.
Goodness.
So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Talking about your chart, it was kind of interesting because when we decided to do this episode, we decided to exchange natal charts for one another. And I remember the first time yours popped up, I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of different. Because most of the time I've been looking at my chart, and I saw a very different thing where we both have planet clumping. We have clumping of planets in like two houses that are right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is kind of an interesting dynamic. You know, I have a few houses over here with almost all my planets, and you have a few houses over here with almost all your planets, but they're different ones.
Yeah.
And it's like different houses, well, different planets.
You know, what's interesting to me is that I'm looking at your chart, and all but one of your planets are in the Eastern Hemisphere.
Mm.
And all but two of my planets, if you're not counting Chiron, are in my Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
So we're in completely different hemispheres.
Yeah. I also noticed the most of your planets are above the horizon. Mine are kind of half and half.
You're a half and half, yeah. Yeah.
So
how do you translate that? What is your interpretation of where the planets are and how many of them are where, if you have one?
Okay, when I first look at a chart, I basically take kind of like a mental snapshot, and it's just like, boom, there it is. And then I just find, it's like a Where's Waldo picture. I just let my eyes and follow and go wherever they find the most interesting material. And, you know, then, of course, after a minute or two, it'll be like, okay, I know enough about astrology that, you know, let's get the big ones that people always start with. Let's do the sun and the moon and the ascendant and all those things and get those out of the way and be where those are. And like, okay, now we got those. And now we can go on to back to some other things that look more interesting. So it's kind of following what I understand the general process is, but also allowing for complete just wherever.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds to me like an intuitive process.
How about you?
It's changed a lot because I was usually a lot more analytical and clinical in my past when it came to astrology and tarot and any kind of method of divination I happened to be learning and numerology. But it's really gotten a lot more intuitive in the recent times than it was in the past. And I have kind of I start with the analytical look, but let's say, for example, if there's a traditional meaning for, let's say, I don't know, I'm going to pick one out of the air, Libra.
Okay.
If there's a traditional meaning for what the sign Libra entails, I don't speak to every single element of that when I'm doing an interpretation because there's some elements that just don't matter. To me, it's almost just kind of like it's like constantly doing weights and balances. Like I was like, say, like, instead of like a pivotal scale, imagine a scale with like, you know, 12 arms. And I'm constantly just moving weights from one to the other just to kind of see what pulls on what. It's like pulling strings and see what levers pull what counterweights and things.
Almost
like
a tilt-a-whirl.
Yeah, I could see that, like a tilt-a-whirl.
But yet, wherever your attention is going is constantly rebalancing it so that it stays on the central pivot.
Yeah.
Kind of like that?
The difference is, you know, I get dizzy in 2 seconds on a tilt-a-whirl, where looking at a nail chart, I do get dizzy after looking at it for long enough, but it's not as quick. But yeah, same idea.
All the symbols start blurring into one. It's like, exactly. A circle and a line. It's another circle and a line.
when the left side of my head starts to weigh more than the right side of my head, it's one of my cues to be just done. Let's put this to bed.
What do you mean your left side weighs more than your right side?
When I'm absorbing tons of information, when I need to stop absorbing tons of information, like when I'm really heavily studying something, the left side of my head will get really thick and dull, like almost like a headache, but it's not really. Huh. It's just this really super heaviness to it. And I just have to stop.
I check out.
What do you mean you check out?
Yeah, it's. I will be, you know, getting taking in information, and then all of a sudden, when I've reached my limit, I'll just stop, and it's like, I go off somewhere for at least a few seconds, and then all of a sudden I realize like, oh, I'm off, or I'm out somewhere.
Oh,
and then I
in
come
other
back.
Words, your mind just kind of yanks you out.
Yeah, it's like I went to sleep for a minute or something, but I'm actually awake.
I'd be curious to see if there's something in your chart about that.
Oh, okay. Well, go right ahead. Be my guest.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I would be talking to you or I'd be going over your chart and it would just kind of pop out.
Uh-huh.
I would say I can't say necessarily that what you're talking about is attributed to X, Y, or Z per se. But it's more of I kind of wonder if that's kind of because – I one of the things about charts that's great is that I'm sure there would be something in your chart that would speak to that, because when we're on autopilot, our charts really speak to how we kind of automatically respond to certain situations. Even if we've learned not to, how we've had to learn not to do things, whatever we were unlearning is often kind of shown in our charts too.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was in high school and I went to a very, very strongly academically oriented college prep high school that, you know, grades were the thing. And it was almost very Spartan. It was like, you will do this. And they, you know, it's like, we expect you to do about 3 to 4 hours of homework a night for the average student. And like, after being in school all day. And so for me, I think it goes that blanking out goes back to that, where it's just like, okay, I've reached my limit for today, or at least for a little while. I have to go out for a moment, take a breather, okay, now we can go back again.
How good were you at those kind of things? It's at the studying the myriad of subjects.
It went too fast. By the time we got into the class, settled down, the bell rang, attendance was called, started getting into the lesson, we probably had maybe 30 to 40 minutes of actual lesson, and then it was right back to the next thing. And I kept saying to myself when I got out of high school, hello?
Self?
Yeah. Yeah, I kept saying to myself, to me.
Self? I got that from Jackie. She always does that. I kept saying to myself, self.
But yeah, I kept saying that, you know, this buffet of courses and information so quickly, you know, going through seven different subjects in one day was not set up very well for me. And so I was like, well, let's try college and see what that's like. And oh my goodness, having like a course or two this day and then going a couple days and having another one, and then, you know, having it spread out where you could actually spend 2 or 3 hours on just one subject, that worked out so much better for me. And my brain learned to focus very much on just one thing for hours at a time. And it was like, I understand, oh my goodness, psychology so much better than I ever have before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of what it is. I think is when I blank out a little bit. I think it goes back to the whole high school thing where it's just like, okay, I'm done. Take a breather.
Yeah.
And I'm back.
That makes sense. Especially how we learn things, you know, and what would deal with that in the charts? Let's see. Jupiter would deal with learning, but kind of more in a broad spectrum way. I think Mercury would deal with it more in just kind of information gathering and ideas and things like that. Of course, Gemini and Virgo both deal with that. And
what about
so
Saturn?
Saturn is kind of a harsh teacher, in my mm-hmm. opinion. Saturn is kind of the, I don't want to say the bully, but in a way, Saturn to me, it doesn't really, you can learn, probably the best things you'll learn will be from Saturn, but it's not like you're like a course that you want to sign up for. it's usually the thing you're trying to get away from, and Saturn kind of grabs you by the, you know, the collar and says, get back here.
Okay, so you're talking about you're talking about the nice teacher planets.
Oh, and Jupiter would be a nice teacher planet, I would say. Saturn is not a nice teacher planet. Saturn is just like, you know what? I'm going to pin you in this box until you figure it out.
Say uncle, say uncle.
Say uncle, yeah. Saturn is the say uncle planet, in my opinion. So, but I think our best lessons come from Saturn in some weird way. And now I want to be clear to say that doesn't mean that I don't believe there's this kind of this nobility in suffering. That's not what that's meant to say. What it's meant to say is that if there is something that's kind of a challenge in front of you, don't run away from it. Mm-hmm. Just look it square in the eye and say, all right, what is it you're trying to teach me? I think that's what Saturn is all about.
It's kind of like getting those messages, those automatic updates for programs, where it's like you start a program, it's like, hey, there's a new version, do you want to update now? Like, not now. Hey, there's a new version, do you want to update now? No, not now. And it just keeps getting coming back to you, and then all of a sudden, after you let it go for too long, and your program starts degrading with how well it's working, and it's just getting worse and worse, and that thing starts popping up like, okay, I'll update now, and you update, and it's like, it's back to working normal again. Kind of like Saturn is, we're going to keep throwing this at you until you do it, and it's going to be less and less comfortable until you actually take care of it.
Well, and, you know, there may be a case where Saturn, you don't, like, for example, I'm looking at your chart right now, and I see your Saturn's kind of a heavier Saturn than some other charts maybe. If you've got Saturn sitting in Capricorn, it's kind of going to be a little easier to deal with. But unfortunately, your Saturn is sitting directly opposite of Capricorn, because, you know, Saturn rules Capricorn, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now your Saturn is in the opposite of Capricorn, which happens to be Cancer. So from what I've learned, when a planet sits in the opposite, it's in its detriment, which means that it's kind of going to be a point of where there's always going to be kind of a self-consciousness to it.
Mm-hmm.
You may learn to deal with it, but it's going to be something that you're constantly, throughout your whole life, you're really, well, no, let me rephrase that. Not throughout your whole life. Really, from the majority part of your life, from when you start becoming into your own, which is like, you know, 15,
mm-hmm.
until you get to your kind of established adult, which is your mid-40s, that whole period of kind of coming into your own, I think you find your groove with it and you find your peace with it after you come out of your 40s. But throughout that whole period, it tends to be this kind of, you get kind of self-conscious about it. And that's kind of what I see as when a planet's in detriment, like it is in your chart.
Kind of like not coming into my own with the whole Saturn energy until, you know, early to mid 40s or so. The whole Saturn thing, what is it teaching though?
Well, it's what you have to learn about yourself than anything.
I see what you're saying.
And because in the way I've interpreted it here is you've got Saturn sitting in Cancer, and luckily for you, you've got trines that kind of go from your sun sign and Venus and Mars, which are all, as you know your chart, they're all in Scorpio for you, because you're just like got this hard hitting Scorpio stuff going on, and I think all that hard hitting Scorpio stuff kind of really eases some of that insecurity that comes with Saturn being in Cancer. The reason it's such an insecurity is because Cancer is all about expressing one's emotions. And I would say Cancer is more of a sign where it's very emotionally impulsive, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's very much dictated by its emotions, you know?
Oh, definitely.
It makes choices. It feels emotion and then takes action based on those emotions. Mm-hmm. Now, Scorpio, of course, is a water sign, but I don't see Scorpio that way at all. Scorpio is very, very intensely emotional, but not on a reacting to the emotion things. It's rather kind of looking for the emotion and seeing how far it can kind of maintain that intensity.
Hmm.
That's kind of, to me, what a Scorpio energy is about.
Gotcha.
But the Cancer energy is more just about, you know, I really want to be able to take care of people, and I want people to take care of me, and I really want to be in this kind of nice, feel good, feel safe, feel warm, comforted environment. And I this is just the way I feel, and I make no excuse for my feelings. And Saturn's sitting there going, yeah, emotions are not logical things. Emotions don't have order. They don't have sequence. They're not in lockstep. So that's why there's such a conflict between the two. And in your chart, I think it's because I think it's that whole thing. It's the but because you're working from an emotional, a deeply, deeply, intensely emotional place, you're comfortable in that area. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're uncomfortable with the emotional aspects of it. It's more when it comes to, you know, if I'm supposed to be doing things a certain way, if there's a certain logic to things, or if I find that I'm stuck and limited here. How do I deal with that on an emotional level? Am I going to make, you know, the right choices? Even though being emotionally buried in it is so compelling for me. and of course, there's no judgment there. That's a life path thing.
Totally.
But it's, you know, when you're playing in that realm, it kind of leaves you because of where it is in your chart. And you know what? I'm going to come back to this theory because I could really go on a big tangent about some of the stuff in your chart that just kind of was an epiphany for me astrologically.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to monopolize, so you can give me your feedback on the stuff I was just telling you.
And if I refuse?
If you refuse, I'll carry the show.
No.
On my back, like a donkey. Like a beast of burden.
That is so your ascendant. That is so your Cancer ascendant.
What's that?
The non-competitive, passive type. You know, sure, yeah, okay. You know, I will take the brunt of the hit so we can maintain cohesion or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I found interesting about your chart, but I'll get to that in just a minute. I'm going to jump around a little bit because my brain is just, you know, with astrology, it can go 100,000 different places in any second.
Just by the nature of this art.
But to respond to what you're saying, yeah, that is definitely one of those things that is totally within my nature where, you know, it's like the decision-making process is like 70 to 80% emotion and then 20 to 30% thought. That's why I constantly use thought to analyze emotion and emotion to fill out my thoughts. You know, it's kind of like, should we have ice cream? Well, I really want ice cream. Well, how long has it been since we ate? Do we need the calories? Do we really want to feel the taste of the ice cream right now? Do we have the kind of ice cream we want to eat? Well, okay, wait a second. You mean we don't have the kind of ice cream we want? Then we don't need ice cream. You know, if I can't have the one I want, then it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. Well, you could go out and get the ice cream. How much do I want ice cream? Okay, let's do a scale of one, you know, and this is what constantly goes on for almost every decision I make, which, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm able to go through this stuff quite quickly, you know, almost in a matter of in a second or two. But to break out down the process, I can see how what you're saying with logical and the emotional, you know, kind of playing volleyball.
Well, it's not so much the logical and emotional playing volleyball. I mean, there is a degree of that because you've got your Mercury, which deals with kind of the intellect and the communication part of you, that's in conjunct with your Mars, which is the, you know, I'm going to take action, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be aggressive and go forward, and I'm not going to take no for an answer kind of thing. And those two are always working in tandem. Those two are kind of amplified each other. But the thing is because Mars is sitting in its home, mm-hmm. because it's sitting in its house, it's sitting in Scorpio. And Scorpio is ruled by Mars, at least from my teaching. There's different teachings. Some say it's a Neptune thing. But I kind of leave the outer three to kind of do what they're going to do. I don't think consider them rulers. I kind of consider them influencers. But so for me, for my learnings, Mars is the ruler of Scorpio. And because of that, everything else is going to defer to your Mars. Oh. Your Mars has got the first say of everything. So for you, it's going to be like your tendency would be, if I can really kind of explore the depths of my feeling and emotion with some kind of intensity, I'm going to just do that, which takes me there.
Mm-hmm.
And your thoughts are going to be in alignment with that generally. And even in the way you communicate, you're going to communicate on a very, and I think this is one of the interesting things I discovered about your chart, Donald, is that you would have an inclination to really want to connect with people because Scorpios do. Scorpios really, let me back up a second.
Okay.
I have a totally different take on Scorpios than some of the traditional stuff I hear. Like you talked about it even in the first episode, they're secretive. And you say people don't think of you as very Scorpio,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they're secretive and they're sex driven. And I don't see Scorpios that way. You know, I look at basically what's the modality and what's the element. And they're fixed. You guys are fixed water signs, which tells me that it's all about maintaining a certain emotional intensity.
Mm.
And Scorpios will look to other people because people are the best and greatest sources for emotional intensity.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Better than anything. So Scorpios want to connect with people. Scorpios really want to connect on a very deep level. And I think what makes people think Scorpios are secretive is that if Scorpios, it's important to be gotten by a Scorpio, but that's not as easy to do. And Scorpios have come out with this emotional intensity, and people are like, you know, a lot of people are kind of skittish about that. Yeah, you're getting a little too intense for me emotionally. You're wanting me to connect with you emotionally, and I'm not comfortable with that. And Scorpios are like, if you don't get me on an emotional level, then I don't have time for you.
Yeah, intimidation, you know, intimidating type thing.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, I'm going to wall you out, and I'm going to shut you out. And but people see stuff running deep, but they don't understand it. So because Scorpios are always digging in deep into that emotional thing. So to them, it seems secretive. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like for me, a Gemini, people say, well, you guys are two-sided. We're like, we're not two-sided. We just see both sides. For people who don't see both sides, they'll think that that's two-sided, you see? So I think it's kind of a perspective.
Oh, I think it's totally a perspective. And yeah, that's one of the things that I found really interesting in your chart was that your true node and your Venus. And true node was one of those things that took me a little while to understand in astrology. And the way I understand what a true node is...
Excuse me, are you talking about north and south nodes?
Yeah, it's also called the north node.
Oh, okay, you're talking about the true node, north node. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
And I'm only talking about your specific north node.
Okay.
So, but my understanding is the north node is kind of what you want to have more of. It's what you want to experience more of in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like the south node is what you've experienced most of in the past. Some right. people say the north node is, you know, what your life goal is here on earth or whatever. And I wouldn't take it quite to that extent. Just basically what you want, kind of the experiences you want to have and whatnot.
Right. I agree with you on that.
I found it really interesting, and I had to double check it like a number of times because I was just like, that's just weird. But your north node is in Taurus in the 11th house. And Taurus is ruled by Venus. And your Venus is also in the 11th house.
Yeah, my Venus is very powerful in my chart.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things I was totally drawn to. And then I was like, okay, so we have like the North Node and Venus in the 11th house. Whoa. And I had to refresh my memory on, you know, what the 11th house was. And it was like how you connect with other people, the relationships that you have, your reputation that you see in others. anything that you can think of that has to do with relationships, social groups, group activities, basically finding the commonality with others that with similar experiences and similar interests. And with your North Node and your Venus in there, especially Venus with in Taurus and with its ruler, I'm like, whoa. You know, that's what you're kind of talking about with my Mars and Scorpio with its ruler being Scorpio. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow. So that's why I can see how relationships with people are extremely important. I would go as far to say is you need to be able to be connecting to a number of different people in a number of different ways. Kind of like to have a different flavors of relationships, like you'd have in a different options of a buffet if you go to a restaurant. Right. So, but yeah, that's one thing that just probably within 30 seconds, I was like, oh, this is kind of an interesting chart. Yeah, that's, oh, look, so, whoa, you know? Yeah, and I was like, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, Venus is a pretty, it's very powerful in my chart for sure.
So I found that really, really interesting. You know, the other thing that I found, probably within the first 90 seconds of looking at your chart, you have no fire in your elements.
I don't have any fire in my elements. Yep.
You have absolutely none.
No, I really don't, which is kind of interesting. It's very interesting. I think that I just find it interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well,
as you have no earth, which is really kind of interesting as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, unless you go into the asteroids and different things like that, then wait a second. Yeah, I have earth. Wait.
No, I don't.
There's
nothing in your earth.
You're right.
But, you know, I do want to talk a little bit about the North Node, because okay. I think the North Node, I think we forget to look at the South Node. And then I want to talk a little bit about houses. The North Node, they call it the True Node.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with your assessment that it's not necessarily your life path, because I really think that your midheaven talks about your life path in a big way.
Okay.
And I'm more of an angle guy than houses. I've never really kind of wrapped myself around the houses. I don't think in my interpretations, they don't offer me enough to use them.
Okay.
However, I do use the angles, the ascendant, the midheaven, the whatever the Greek word is or Latin word is, and then the descendant. Those to me are the really powerful ones, and the rest of it is kind of cake candy. But that's just my style. As far as the North Node and South Node, and the thing that really blew me away in your chart is that when I started looking at the North Node and South Node in your chart, I believe that you have to kind of consider one with the other. And I do consider South Nodes have past life, because when I was looking at my South Node and I got past life glimpses. The minute I start looking at it, for some reason, I get these past life impressions.
Hmm.
And yours is in Gemini, your South Node.
Mm,
and
yeah.
And this, it's the whole chart. Looking at, I didn't get this just, oh, well, your South Node's in Gemini, this is what this means. It has a lot to do with the whole composite of your chart and the why of it. Because the astrological chart, in my opinion, we talked about this in the first episode, is okay, let's set the stage, because this is what's going to help you move you towards certain experiences. You're more likely to move towards certain experiences in your lifetime if you have these specific energies working this way.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way you have certain energies working in your chart and what seems to resonate with you, like, for example, your chart is really about emotional depths and kind of and things like that. And also your chart is very much, it's really interesting because you're so deep, and Scorpios can be very introspective, but yours is not an introspective chart. Your chart more indicates that you pick up your cues about yourself from the people outside you.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really interesting. So it's kind of, it's an interesting thing to do. It actually is handy for you, because when you get so deep inside yourself, you can no longer be very objective. So using the people outside yourself helps you.
I'm sorry. I just thought, I'm like the Weird Al of the Scorpio.
Well, you're an interesting, it's been offered to you that way, I think, for that reason. It's like, you get introspective now, see how you can see it, so you can look outside yourself. But at the same time, your chart also talks about really broad learning. You're very much a, not details-oriented guy, but a broad learning-oriented guy. that the details will kind of annoy you after a while if you get caught up in them, especially emotional details. Mm-hmm. The best way I can look at it is say you're having a discussion with a girlfriend, as an example, and the girlfriend is mad at you, and you're like, let's figure out why. And you get into it, you know, I really want to figure out why she's upset. Yeah. And she says, you know what you said to me the other day? It really hurt my feelings. And you're like, okay. Yeah, but why are your feelings hurt? And what does this mean about you? And da-da-da. And she's like, can't you just apologize? And you're like, I'm sorry that I hurt your feelings. Now let's dig into the big picture of this. And she's like, no, I need you to understand that what you said, you know what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah. 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 I need to.
So you're a big picture guy as far as that goes. You're all about like, how does this fit in the big picture? And this is what your life is about, because really kind of discovering that. I kind of do the little Akashic dip when I was looking at your chart. Mm-hmm. And I never got an impression that you were one of these like super virtuoso guys or these phenom guys. But you were very good at a lot of things. A lot of things. Which is why you can pick up on so many different topics and subjects very quickly and easily. Because you had a past life where you were very good at this. And then one that you were very good at this. And one that you were very good at this. And they were all very, very different. And the Gemini South Node speaks to that. Speaks to you having all these, you know, experiences and being very good in very different areas, and also being a very good public speaker and communicator and stuff like that. But now you've got your North Node sitting in Sagittarius, which is more learning about this kind of big picture and kind of focusing on the greater meaning and how everything fits into that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting kind of discovery, is seeing how being able to look into actual past life experiences,
huh? Yeah,
that you have.
It's interesting for me because I normally don't quite go as far as the past life stuff, but I also don't look at the North and South nodes too in-depthly either. So that's right. Probably why. But yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from. And it was funny because when you said that, when you were talking about, you know, seeing myself through other people and or having a being able to define, or I don't know, I think it's more correct when I said being able to, you know myself through others.
Yeah.
I had to laugh because I instantly thought of Weird Al Yankovic constantly, you know, as long as there's pop culture around, he's got a job.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And that's what he says. Like, it doesn't matter what comes out. I'm a good enough musician. You can do rap, rock, country, whatever. And as long as it gets pretty high on the Billboard charts, I'll make a parody of it. It'll be good. I'm like, that's me. That sounds like exactly what you're talking about. And I was just like, I'm the Weird Al Yankovic of astrology. And I was just like, oh yeah, that just blows my mind. And okay. So, but yeah, when I was looking at your chart, it was very interesting too. I mean, your ascendant in Cancer, to me, I read such intense emotionality there. And to me, your ascendant is kind of like how you see yourself more so than how others see you. And your sun sign is more how others see you and not as much as how you necessarily see yourself. Kind of like the ascendant is your internal stuff. And
wow. I flip that around.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I see the sun is basically just kind of your core you. And I think the ascendant is the reflective property, which is basically how others see you via how you see others and how you see the world.
Oh yeah, I have that completely reversed, and that's interesting. We may have to see if any astrologers out there that are listening to this episode, you know, have their take on it. You know, yeah. With a comment or feedback. But anyway, when I was looking at your chart, I just got this overwhelming sense that the emotions are it for you. That emotional experiences are like that's like your air. and having that emotional experiences in all its different forms is where, you know, your Gemini comes in and says, oh yeah, this was fun. Well, I could see that it could have been fun this way too. Well, hey, what about this? Yeah, well, that was good or bad. Well, it could have been this way too. And it's a whole perspective thing, but it's like experiencing more intense emotion than what I would consider would be the average. You're experiencing life through emotion, intensity, more so than would be the average. And mixing that in with you know, what I saw in the with your North Node and your Venus, I was just like, it was really interesting because it's like there is, well, it's like there's three different perspectives going on at any given time. There's the whole intellectual Gemini, and the twins is able to see, you know, yin and yang, backwards and forwards, left and right. And then there's this whole emotional sense that's able to say, okay, guys, that's all good and everything, but what about this right here? What about the feeling? What about the true sense, the true nature? You know, and then the Gemini say, but it's all true. And I mean, it just seemed like this, any information coming in first hit the emotional, and, you know, for you in your chart when I was reading it for my interpretation, and I was just like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
I don't know if that resonates with you or not.
Oh yeah, sure it resonates with me. I'm very, you know, emotionally oriented. And what I found interesting in re-examining my chart when we first decided to do this is that with my Venus and Taurus really explains why I like a lot of security.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the heavy hitter in my chart. And granted, I'm very Gemini in a lot of my approaches. What I think is interesting about me being very Gemini is that my Mercury, the ruler of Gemini, is right in conjunct with the ascendants, what you were talking about. So with the whole intellectualizing of the emotions, which is what I do a lot of. I try to intellectualize my emotions, which is kind of an mutually exclusive exercise, exercise in futility in a way. But I think the Gemini in me is trying to come to more of an understanding of it rather than an intellectualization of it, which is what I did in the past. So it's kind of interesting that those are so tied. And especially with the Venus and the Moon in conjunct in Taurus, the Moon ruling Cancer, which is where my ascendant is, it's almost like this weird, like you said, kind of a push pull pivotal back and forth thing going on, you know.
And I mean, to me, the image I got in my head is your emotions are like this big, huge air trampoline type thing. Like they have blow up castles that for kids that go inside and they jump around on it. It's like that's like your emotions, and then your Gemini left and right are kind of like jumping around inside there, and your emotions are just like, yeah, this is kind of cool. And then your emotions literally have a lot of fun from your intellectualism, and your intellectual thoughts get a lot of like. They get a completely different perspective from your emotions, which really intrigue them intellectually.
Oh, that's interesting.
If that
I
makes
like
sense.
That bouncy house kind of analogy there.
So, and I found that very, very, very interesting. And the big thing is, or one of the things I found, you know, with your Sun in Gemini, you know, being in the 12th house, I was just like, wow, that's like, depending on who you talk to, the 12th house can be like, oh. Ooh, and other people you talk to, it's like, that's like the karma. That's like, you know, karmic backlash from all the stuff that you get. And some people are like, it's not that bad. And some people are like, yes, it is. And so it depends on your perspective. But, you know, for me, I was just like, okay, so we have this, you know, core of who you are with being able to see both sides of any you know, the twins being able to see both sides of any situation that is completely interpreted and felt through the lens of the emotions. To me, the 12th house also has to do with what you want to present to the world. And I think that's also a little bit of 10th house, too, if I may be getting those a little mixed up. But
I thought you said that was the 11th house is what I wanted to present to the world.
I thought 11th house was your relationships. Your desire to connect.
You're talking about the social relationships.
Yeah. No, well, all kinds of relationships.
That might be varied based on how we interpret our interpretations.
Too. Oh yeah.
And like I said, I'm not a big housewife guy. I mean, I look at it a little bit, but okay.
The other thing I found that was really interesting, I'm trying to remember where it was, but your home is more so a den. More than kind of like an expression to show off to guests of who or what you're interested in. if that makes sense. It's kind of like if you walk into some people's home, it's like, you look over in this wall and there's paintings of, you know, people on the beach, and it's like, they like to feel relaxed. You look over here and there's on the other wall and there's paintings of, you know, dragons and sorcery, and like, they like to have a little bit of a fantasy life. For you, that is not as much as a focus as, you know, I am home. This is my den of refuge. This is where I'm able to just, like, you know, the rest of the world is literally out there.
Yeah, and I would say there's a huge amount of truth to that.
And there is, like, a major separation. It's like this moment as that door shuts, it's just like it's almost like you're in a capsule.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I venture outside electronically and stuff like that. But that there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. So I found that interesting. I was trying to, you know, synergize those two things where it's like, okay, this enormous need for connecting with people and, you know, being intellectual, philosophizing, and then doing stuff on topics and subjects that you actually really enjoy. And then I remember you have talked about in the past where you're in with this group here and this group here and this other group here and then this group, and then you and I do this podcast. I'm just like, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. You are literally connecting to, you know, a lot of people, you know, from the comfort of your own den/capsule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I would, if I was an astrologer, if I was a professional astrologer, then I would say that makes for a very comfortable, a very nice way of living these different aspects of your chart out.
So now let me ask you this. What, from your chart, when you looked at it, made you kind of either scratch your head or that you didn't like that, or that you just didn't, that didn't make any sense to you, or that you didn't understand, that you're curious of my take on?
Oh, my chart?
Yeah.
One thing that I've always found really interesting is that there's three things, and I'll break them down real fast.
Okay.
I have majority of my planets, of my major planets, clumped over there in the sixth and seventh house. But then I have my Jupiter and Saturn and Moon spread out all over the place. Like, I think my my Jupiter is in the 10th house. No, I'm sorry, 11th house. I know my chart really well. My Jupiter is in the 11th house, and my Saturn is in the 3rd house. And those are kind of where I get the majority of my a lot of aspects with the major planets. But the thing that always really got me, the big thing, is my moon, because it is sitting right there. I mean, it right there on the cusp of the signs of Sagittarius and Capricorn. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't have to look over the fence to see it. I mean, 29 feet, 30 inches or 39 degrees or whatever. I mean, it's like almost, if I was born a few minutes later, it would be right on it. And
well, it depends on which way it's moving. I think the moon moves in, I think the moon naturally moves in, what's the word, retrospect?
Oh yeah, I forgot, they go back the other way.
Retroactive. It's retro. Yeah. I think the moon moves retro, so the moon actually might be moving further. So a few minutes earlier.
It's so 60s.
I think is how it works. I forget. Yeah, it's so 60s. Actually, it'd be more. It's so 70s in your term.
Yeah,
because when you were born.
Yeah. But that was one thing I always, you know, I'm always sitting there going, okay, the way my brain works, I need to see it in either is or it isn't. And when I found out about orbs, you know, where, you know, it's kind of like a buffer zone if you're really on the line. I keep looking at my moon. I'm like, well, that's definitely in an orb. So what they say is, okay, take a little bit of the moon in Sagittarius and take a little bit of moon in Capricorn. And that just confuses me even more when I start looking into that.
Well, and I looked at that too, but I think there's more weights placed on it than whether or not it's in Sagittarius or Capricorn. The first thing I look at is what the moon is. The moon rules Cancer. So I go to Cancer and I see that Saturn's it's sitting in Cancer. So I think that has more of a bearing, because then I look at Capricorn, and Capricorn is ruled by, excuse me, Sagittarius is ruled by Jupiter. Capricorn, oh jeez, this is where you, okay. All right, let's be linear about this. I'm looking at your chart. My brain's in non-tangential mode. So, okay. Your moon is sitting in Sagittarius by a hair. Sagittarius is ruled by Jupiter. Your Jupiter is in Pisces. It could flow into Capricorn. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn, and your Saturn is in Cancer.
Oh.
You see, so it's like, what is ruling this, and what aspects does it have? It has a... let's see, your moon is square to Pluto, and your moon is trine to your Chiron. And Chiron's kind of an interesting thing, because Chiron's kind of like the hole in your soul is what I call it. What's one of the karmic things you got to patch up, you know? So it's kind of interesting. You got to take all those into consideration when you're looking at the moon. The strongest aspect you have is to Pluto and to Chiron, and I'm not a big Chiron guy. I can't speak on it really heavily, but I can speak a little bit on the Pluto thing. For Pluto, it's a challenge, and Pluto is sitting in Libra, and Libra is ruled by Venus, and Venus is in is one of your big Scorpio guys, you know? So, yeah. So you know, do you consider it Sagittarian? Do you consider it Cancer?
You mean Capricorn? I see what you're saying.
Excuse me, Capricorn. Well, where do you have more influence? Do you have more influence in fire or earth? You've got nothing in earth. So you don't really have a lot of things pulling on the Capricorn side. In fire, you've got the only thing you've got is, well, no, you've got a couple other things going. You've got Neptune and the North Node, I think, in fire. So you've got more things going in fire, so I think there's more of a Sagittarian influence. But the biggest thing to me is that your North Node is in Sagittarius. And to me, that's kind of one of your, what are you here to experience? So your moon's going to have, you know, the emotions and the fluctuations and the cycles and all that other stuff will come into play when it comes to what you're going to learn.
Hmm.
So I think, you know, I'd say what's going on in common with the moon. With Capricorn, not much.
Okay. Well, thank you for that insight, because that's one of those things where, you know, the way my brain works, it comes down to, I don't have a lot of area for gray. Gray is very confusing to me. Mm-hmm. And gray is where I'm like, okay, flip a coin. Doesn't matter because it's gray. It could go this way or that way. Who knows? And with something like this, where it's all done, it was like, well, this is when I was born. You can't really go in a gray area, because then that's saying you're born a few minutes earlier or a few minutes later. And so what is it?
If you really wanted to know, Donald, where it really hit, I would say you'd have to look at your progressions and your transits. Because you'd say, okay, if you tracked your day and you noticed that the moon was in Sagittarius versus when the moon was in Cancer, or excuse me, Capricorn, if you notice that it had more of an effect when it was in this sign versus that sign, that would give you your answer.
Mm. So just find out what, how much of the day it was in which sign, or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you just say, okay, you know, it was, yeah, like say you take a given day,
okay,
and a given month, I guess, because it changes, it moves like monthly, right?
Oh, so you're not talking about the day of my birth. Okay, so right now I could look up this month and be like, okay, how often is the moon in Capricorn this month? Is that what you're talking about?
Or when was it? Yeah, just say, when was it? What was my, what were my emotions like?
Ah, okay, I see what you're saying.
And what were my moods like? Let's go with that. And even your intuition. And then you'd say, okay, when was the moon in Capricorn? What was my moods and intuition like then? And I think that would give you a good baseline as to where it had more effect.
You know, that's such a simple answer, but I had never considered it before.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
That makes so much sense. And the thing is, I can remember emotional states really well, more so than other mental states sometimes. And so I can actually go back there, and I could even start charting it from here on out. And, you know, next year sometime, like, oh, see, I have all this data. I'm like, ooh, Scorpios, love data.
Well, I would tell you this. I would say that if I were a betting man, you'd notice more in your Capricorn than you would in your Sagittarius. because your Sagittarius has some kind of nice influences and stuff like that. And but because Capricorn, you've got Venus and Capricorn, excuse me, Venus and Saturn are both in detriment. So they're the ones that are really going to make you the most self-conscious in their energies. But Venus is less, Venus has dignity by term, so it's a little bit easier to deal with than Saturn is for you. So I bet you you're going to see more issues with Moon in Cancer, or in Capricorn.
All those C names, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's like trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle when you, on 3 hours of sleep.
Maybe that's what the astrologers thousands of years are doing. Like, we have C because we only have 15 letters in our alphabet. Let's do this C, like this C. And
you know what I think it was? The people who were dubbed astrologers were the ones when they, when they're, you know, the people who really could figure out who to seat whom with at a wedding reception. They're like, oh yeah, sit these people with these people because these people, then they're like, okay, you need to become an astrologer. That's what I think, how they earned their wings. You ever tried to plan out a wedding seating chart?
No, I have not.
Oh man, Erno Rubik would be like, I'm not touching this. Yeah, forget it. No, no.
I've heard about it a lot, you know, and it's made fun of a lot in sitcoms and movies and stuff. And I'm just like,
right, it's earned that. It's earned its jesting.
Yeah, I can think of it if I go with just the family that I know of that from my families, and I'm just like, okay. Then we're bringing in someone else, and like, okay, so how would these people work together? Well, I personally don't want to sit next to this person in my family because I've never really liked them all that much, but you know, I have to invite them because, well, they're family. And
right,
you know,
exactly.
And it's like, I've always liked your cousin from your father's side of the family, so can we bring them a little bit closer so we're actually sitting next to them?
Yeah,
I can see how that would be a pretty big headache in and of itself too.
Oh yeah, right.
So I think you have a much better grasp of your chart than I may have, but I'll take a shot. Is there anything in there that you want me to consider or look at, or?
You know, like, again, I'm not a house guy, so so you could, I would say, feel free to speak on whatever houses seem to kind of strike your fancy. Obviously, I have a couple of crowded houses. That much is clear.
Well, one of the things I found when I was looking at your stuff, and it was your 11th house. Your 11th house seemed to just really stand out a lot more than your 12th house. I'm not saying that, you know, your 12th house was still there, but your 11th house was just like, here I am, I'm right here. look at me.
Right.
So, and you know, then I looked at what was in your 11th house, and it's just like, there, you got your Moon, you got your Venus, you got Mars, you got your North Node, and it's just like, whoa, those are some you know, pretty heavy things right there. And basically, to break it down a little bit more, one of the things that I really saw with, especially with your North Node and with your Venus, with that connection right there, is learning to really enjoy the good stuff in life. You know, kind of like being pampered, having really nice things, finding the beauty in things that are there, and getting to a point where, you know, you can actually allow yourself to fully, you know, immerse yourself in things of that nature without feeling bad because, you know, not, there are people in the world that don't have this, or, you know, guilty or whatever. So if I had to say one of the biggest things I saw in the houses with you, it would be your 11th house. And I know I've talked about it a lot during this episode, but if I had to break everything down that I've talked about, it would be that the connections you have with the people that are in your life are extremely important. There is definitely a very strong need to have I'm not going to say as many people as possible, but a good variety of people. I keep thinking of it as, you know, eating a meal. You don't want to eat this. You don't want to eat cornflakes for every meal of the day. You know, you want to have to, you know, sort it out, and you want to have to a little bit more variety. I see that with all kinds of relationships, not just, you know, romantic or friendship or whatever, but I mean every kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. And I also see that with the Venus and the North Node especially, you know, that is basically hey, it's like the universe is almost saying, hey, here's your ticket to the chocolate factory. And there's a little party that's saying, oh, but if I eat too much chocolate, I'm going to get a stomach ache, and I don't want a stomach ache. And everyone else is saying, you get to go to the chocolate factory and have as much chocolate as you want. Like, well, maybe this isn't as good of a thing as it is. And I'm exaggerating a little bit, obviously. But, just learning to really, really enjoy material and things and beauty. And that definitely comes from a lot of the tourist influence as well. So, anyway, that's cool. My take.
Yeah, I like that. I could see that. That definitely is. I could see that as something that would be for me to kind of look at and work on in my life path. Yeah, there's a lot of times that I don't want to get too caught up in materialism, and there's times that I get a little bit more apologetic of the good fortune of my life than not. But, you know, again, like we talked about in the beginning of the thing, when we talked about this on episode number one.
So long ago.
So long ago. A year and a half ago, I think it is. As we talked about in that, for me, doing the gratitudes are so important, because then it does allow me to embrace that more. And every day when I do my gratitudes, I do them daily. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have gratitude for is that is the lifestyle that I have, and that I maintain the lifestyle, and that includes my home, that includes working vehicles, that includes, you know, being able to travel and do all these things that Jackie and I do. So yeah, so I think if I weren't doing those gratitudes, it would be a much greater challenge for me than not. So yeah, I think there's a lot of merit in what you said.
Now that brings up an interesting point that we haven't really discussed in reference to the natal charts is. One of the things that I have found that people often forget is, you know, if you go with your natal chart at your birth, it's supposed to be for your whole life. What I've found is as you age, you grow and everything. And what I refer to in the first episode, where it's kind of like when you're born, it's like a factory default of a computer when you bring it home from the store. When you actually bring it home, you put your own programs in it to make it yours, you know, that's going to be like what you learn, the skills that you develop and stuff like that. So that throughout your lifetime, there might be things in your chart that, you know, when you were born were very much there, but they're no longer applicable. If that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, I think it makes sense.
So, and I find that really interesting because throughout the different ages when at different times I've looked at my chart, there'll be times when, oh, I have a much different perspective than I did, you know, 15 years ago. And like, oh, hey, you know, that could mean, oh, and that would refer to, oh, okay, that makes more sense that way.
Yeah.
And so there's a few things that are there that are just, that are more defined and become more clear. And there are other things that are still kind of like, I have no idea what that is. Maybe someday I'll understand, but right now I don't understand it.
Right. Yeah. I think this has been a really fascinating kind of take on looking at astrology. The psychic told me, he says, you know, you could actually make a career in doing any kind of psychic work if you wanted to. One of them being astrology, he told me. And I didn't tell him. I didn't tell him about the podcast. I didn't tell him that I read tarot cards. I didn't tell him any of that stuff. He actually asked me. He says, do you read tarot cards? And I'm like, yeah, I do. He says, well, You do well reading tarot cards. He's giving me suggestions on how I can learn the cards. And I'm like just nodding nicely because, you know, I've been doing them for over 20 years. But yeah, so it's kind of fun to see really kind of these energies and these influences. It's also kind of fun to see how we have slightly different approaches and interpretations to doing natal charts. And to me, what was a lot of fun was really kind of brushing off the rust, because I haven't really done them in a long time. I mean, I learned so much about them, and then I did some brush up work and learned some new things that I find very exciting. And yeah, I think what happens is that, number one, the Gemini in me just gets into it and then moves on to something different. But I think the other part of it too is that, you know, I'm always real paranoid about feeling like I'm owned by the chart. I mean, I've heard, and we've talked about this before, I've heard too many people be like, well, Mercury's in retrograde. Don't do this. Don't buy any don't buy any electronic equipment, you know, during Mercury in retrograde. Don't buy a car. And I'm just like, But what I do find it interesting to see in the charts is to see there are certain things that will always kind of have a little bit tougher time doing it, or a little bit insecure in. We'll find better and greater tools on dealing with those, but know that that's just kind of what we came into the picture with, so that we don't feel like, you know, some people beat themselves up saying, why is this so difficult? Well, it's because that's kind of what we chose coming into our lives to have as a challenge, to kind of, to help us see things a certain way or experience things a certain way. And I think the nail chart really kind of gives a nice perspective on
that. Oh, yeah, definitely. And remember, it's just a tool.
It's just a tool, exactly. You know, it's as good as the user. And then again, when you set the tool down, you can, there's other tools.
I think this has been, you know, like you said, a really exciting episode. And I really like the take that we took. I like the take that we took with us. I like the take that we took with this episode as in contrast to the first episode. So David and I would like to thank all of our listeners. We actually have just about had our first all-time record-breaking month in November 2011, and we'd like to thank all of you for that. It's been really exciting for both David and I.
And if you want to leave feedback, you can actually leave feedback on our iTunes page. You can leave a comment or review there, good, bad, or indifferent. We also welcome comments both on our Facebook page, which is Take the Red Pill on Facebook, and at TTRP Podcast or TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. You can also comment on the episodes there and get more information with our show notes.
I'm Don Dalton, wishing you to keep looking at your stars.
And I'm David Deere. Don't let Saturn boss you around.
I like that one.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, man.